We're here with Professor in Residence, Union College professor, and brilliant light in our area, Brad Hayes. Brad, welcome back to the Congressional Corner. I want to ask you, because everybody's talking about it, Hillary and Bernie Sanders. Does Bernie Sanders owe it to Hillary in order to elect a Democrat to quiet them?
Does he owe it to her? That's an interesting way of framing it. I don't think he owes it to her. He may owe it to the positions that he's staked out, in the sense that if you are thinking about his positions in policy space, you want to get as close to those positions as possible. And clearly, on most issues, he is much, much closer in policy space to somebody like Hillary Clinton than he is to Donald Trump. And so in that sense, he's going to want to have a government eventually that is going to be able to enact some of the policies that are at least closer to his positions. And so I think that, you know, when we're thinking a little bit about both Sanders and his supporters, right, that you're likely to see a pivot at some point in time, probably after the California primary, a pivot to defeating Trump, right, and others on the right, so that you can kind of realize at least a partial vision of the revolution that he's been leading.
Well, Sanders called for yet another debate with Hillary Clinton. And so far, as we speak, she said no. I happen to think strategically she'd be loopy to say yes. I voted for Bernie Sanders, and yet I think now the healing process has got to begin, or a lot of people think Trump is going to win as a result of this discord.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help. And you can see that even on the right. You mentioned in our last conversation that the national polls have basically an even split between right. Clinton and Trump. And I think part of that is just simply that Trump's been able to do more work to shore up the right. I mean, that's not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination, but he has been able to work on that, right? And there's simply less division in the Republican Party, at least on the surface right now, right? There, you know, underneath, there's still lots of division.
Right.
My point is that the more you have to talk about divisions, right, the more that those divisions become a reality, the more difficult it is to gain momentum for your campaign, the more difficult it is to have some sense of unity, some sense of excitement about your candidate and your prospects in November. And all of those things can really harm a campaign. And moreover, you know, right now, the target, right, that Trump has set is, you know, just simply on Clinton, right? And he's able to hammer away, whereas the Clinton campaign has to spend some time not just talking about Trump, but also about Bernie Sanders. As much as she wants to focus on Trump, you know, Sanders is still out there hammering away. So she has to deal with that reality.
So has she got this wrapped up?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't see pretty much any pathway for Sanders, you know, especially given the tally of the superdelegates. And, you know, I think I really do expect that in a few weeks here after the California primary, you'll begin to see some move towards an end of the campaign, right, rather than kind of pushing it into the Democratic convention. Probably an opportunity to try to, in some ways, kind of institutionalize this revolution, right? You can think a little bit here about 1988, where Pat Robertson, obviously in the Republican side, was, pushing his campaign. That was not successful, but it did give rise, you know, to the socially conservative right. They were able to become a force in the Republican Party that we really hadn't seen before. And the question is whether, you know, Sanders is going to be willing to, in some way, set his ambitions aside and push forward his revolution independent of
Indeed.
Himself.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can do that, right, then it's really going to affect the Democratic Party, right? The Democratic Party will have to respond. You'll begin to see kind of more liberal positions being staked out in the party's platform. And that matters in terms of the policies produced once a party is in office.
Let's talk a little bit about Hillary's partner, Bill Clinton, otherwise known as Slick Willie to some. We now see Trump concentrating some of his fire on Clinton. Bill Clinton, who retired as one of the most popular presidents in the history of the United States. So one wonders whether he thinks that Bill Clinton has to be done away with or damaged in order for him to win this election. And piling on, he is now inferring Bill Clinton was guilty of rape, of all things.
I think, you know, that piling on metaphor is a really useful one, right, because it suggests a smothering. And I think what Trump is doing and what he's really done effectively in the primary season was essentially to smother the campaign messages of others, right, by whether it's the outlandishness of his claims, the frequency of his claims, the directness of his claims. He's really been able to kind of, grab and hold the media cycle. And I think he's using the kind of the negative parts of the Clinton White House years and Clinton legacies to frame and to disrupt Hillary and her message. And this is, you know, this is particularly problematic. And this is a strategy, though, that's not, kind of new to Trump. This is something that the right has been doing for a while, right? I mean, this is just building off of Republican efforts to build scandals out of Benghazi, to build scandals out of the private emails that Clinton has used. And so in some ways, these things feel outsized. And they do disrupt, they do interfere with the ability of Clinton to get her message out and to appeal to particularly those few voters that may still be up for grabs.
So what do you make of the fact that Trump won't release his tax returns?
Yeah, that's
or up to now as we speak.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a good question, right? It just raises, that specter of what could be in there. I'll be interested to see how long his resistance continues. Obviously, you're not formally obligated to do this, but pretty much everyone in recent memory has. And so the fact that he's not willing to raises that flag of speculation as to what's in there about whether, in fact, he's not worth nearly as much as he says, which, his success as a businessman has been, central in his message and about his claims of self and his worth. Worth as a candidate. So if in fact they reveal it's nowhere close to what he said, that I guess, suppose could be problematic. There are issues about, the ways in which he's perhaps kind of exploited some U.S. Commercial rules and tax policies to his benefit, although he's been able to kind of work his way around those in the past. So I'm not sure that those are a major problem. This particular issue, in thinking about kind of smothering, we know that Clinton has been hammering away on this. And I think the Democrats will continue that if for no other reason than to raise that issue of, OK, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about Trump. Let's talk about the degree to which, he may be doing some things that are nefarious. And that then shifts the focus. It puts him on the defensive, which is a very useful position for the Democrats.
Well, Hillary may just have to change her style. She may have to become more Trump-esque if she's to prevail.
It is possible, right? I mean, she is obviously trying to take on the mantle of the statesperson, trying to appear more presidential. But we saw that in the Republican Party, that just didn't work very well, and that sometimes you're just going to have to mix it up. So I think we're going to have to see how the campaign decides on a strategy and, what kind of messages it produces to counter this wave of Trump.
Well, Brett Hayes, thank you so much. Our academic in residence here at WAMC, we very much appreciate your being with us. And when we come back the next time, let's find something else to talk about.
Sounds good, Alan.